Hey guys, thanks again for joining us. This is Dark Temp 66, aka Joe. Our next episode is going to focus on Scoia'tael, as we have on all the other factions. So I hope you enjoy it. Also, just to remind you, we would really appreciate it if you would hit the subscribe button in your podcast engine. Of course, there's lots of costs that come to content creation and making this as professional as we can. This helps us get a little bit more airspace and a little bit more visibility in the community. Also, keep in mind we have the barkeepsofredania.com website and also the Barkeeps of Redania on YouTube if you want to see live versions of the episodes you're listening to. We're also going to try to roll some ads after our introductions to help bring a little bit more monetary value to the stream to help keep the train moving down the tracks. So we appreciate all your guys' patience and thank you so much for all your support. And without further ado, our advertisement and then the episode. Thanks for listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. This is Dark Tap 66, aka Joe. We got another new member joining us today, Jay Conrad, aka James. James, tell us about yourself. I think you're a streamer. How you been doing? What you like to play? All that good stuff.
Thanks. Hey guys. My name's James. I stream under Jay Conrad 1337. I'm from originally the Midwest in Minnesota, but I live in upstate New York currently. And I've been streaming since about March. I have mostly been streaming Gwent, and I got into it probably around that same time frame. I did play the beta a little bit, but I was doing a Witcher 3 playthrough, so I wasn't really focused on getting into Gwent at that time. But now, once I came into that period of me beginning to stream, I found I really liked the game, and yeah, I like to have fun on stream. So thanks for having me on here.
Absolutely, man, and welcome. So we're going to be talking mainly about Scoia'tael today, what cards you should make. Kind of if you've been listening to the podcast for a bit, you should kind of get what our vibe is, what we're going for. So without further ado, guys, what Scoia'tael, what should we be making? What shouldn't we be making? All that good stuff.
Well, I have one that I'm going to start with. I think it's really important. It's not, you know, it's going to have use in pretty much any deck that I can think of would be Fauv. Because it's a tutor for any sort of nature card. So it allows you to pull or add an additional card to the game. And when Scoia'tael revolves so mainly right now around the nature card plays, it just makes sense to be able to pull that missing piece of the puzzle at any time. And it's only 8 provisions, so it fits into any deck pretty easily.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would say Fauv is the de facto tutor for ST.
Yeah, Fauv can pull. It can pull a unit as well as any nature card because it can pull Call of the Forest, and then you can just grab a unit instead of just the nature card there. Really helpful.
And then yeah. I would probably follow it up with Shaping Nature. It's probably my favorite nature card simply because it has the echo status, and you have an option to choose one of 3 effects that you want to give the card when you play it. You know, including giving Veil status if the unit's poisoned or whatever. It helped me keep tall units on the playing field. Or you can just go for a really big boost with a boost by 8, right? And even the third effect being the boost by 5 and Vitality by 5 plays very well into a Hamadryad combo or something like that. But the big thing's the echo status. That would be the main echo card for Scoia'tael. So I'd definitely recommend crafting Shaping Nature as well.
Yeah, so what's some of the main mechanics that... I'll be honest with you, I have not played a ton of Scoia'tael since the Harmony... it's been a while. I mean, Harmony originally was, you know, any card you'd play on a row that was different was unit card. So let's say you played like a Dryad, then you played an Elf. If it had Harmony, it would proc 1. Well, they changed it to... You had to play on the same row, and then they changed it back, right?
Yeah.
So I'll be honest, I've kind of been out of Scoia'tael. Since then, I mean, what are the big meta decks that you're seeing, or the big combos that you guys are seeing with Scoia'tael? Like if someone was listing and they wanted to make a viable Scoia'tael deck, what would they need to focus on?
Well, I just put out a guide on this. So it's been something I've been talking about for a while. The main mechanic that they're playing into right now is Symbiosis. So if you, for example, go to your deck builder and type in Symbiosis in the search bar, you're gonna see basically a few units that have that status. So whenever you have a Symbiosis card on the field, if you're playing Nature's Gift as a leader ability, you're able to spawn Treant tokens. And the more Symbiosis units you have in the playing field at one given time, the stronger each token's going to be. So it's ideal to have cards like Ethne Young Queen, the Hamadryads, and so forth, even Freaksnet, to be able to proc that effect that you're going to be getting from Symbiosis.
Yeah, so what other, you know, what other cards you guys thinking? I mean, Nature's Rebuke is going to be your pretty much your 5-point removal card, which will be incredibly important in that deck because, mm-hmm. you know, if it does a Death Wish, it boosts a is it random, right? Random Trent by 2. So yes. It can be a super powerful card being played correctly, and that's going to be their main removal.
And I'm actually very huge on the Forest Protector. I love this card because what Forest Protector is in the new Scoia'tael decks is the replacement for when people used to use Triss. So with this one here, it's a Treant, and you're able to play a nature card from your graveyard. So assuming you've already used a Rebuke in the game, you can actually play another one. And by using the additional Rebuke, if you're able to trigger a Death Blow with that Rebuke, you actually boost the Forest Protector by 2. So it plays for a ton of points, right?
Yeah, so that's another really good one. You've already talked about is it Fav or Fave? I forget how exactly you say it. What's the Defender card would be really important in that, and that would be, you know, Figgis, right?
Yeah, Figgis. So
that's a big one.
We're definitely going to have to include Novigradian Justice. It is the best tutor, or not deck tutor, but it is the best deck thinning out of any faction for a certain card, you know, because it's a 10. And then it will spawn up Cleaver's Muscle in your melee row, so it spawns a 5 unit, and then it pulls the Volunteers, if that's what you want to be running. So it'll pull out a 4, and then it'll pull out another 4. So you're basically getting 13 points for 10, if you want to put the math like that.
Yeah.
And we can't forget about the one that every single person's running right now. This is probably a card that you should have. And you could even play it in Syndicate as well, because it's a dual faction card. It's Herald Gord, right?
Yeah.
Most of the decks we're seeing revolve around playing nature cards or special cards when it comes to Scoia'tael. So with this one here, it starts off as 3 base power. It's only 7 provision, but on deploy, it gets 1 boost for every special card you've played during the game. So you can imagine how end game, when you include hand buffs as well as the amount of specials you've played, it's really easy to play this card for over 20 points. And that could make the difference of a win and a loss, really.
And that's going to be like your last card, right? That's your big,
exactly.
big final card. What are some other big final cards that you can play with Scoia'tael that you'd recommend?
I would say Skaggs can actually be a final card. Because if you can boost him with some of your dwarves that can boost into the hand or maybe Circle of Life, you can really put down a 14-point Skaggs and remove something that the opponent has like right in the last round. And that can really change the game from maybe you're trailing by like 2 or 3 points, but now suddenly you're up by 6 because you had Skaggs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're definitely going to have to include Dunka. I mean, she is the better version of the Hawker Smuggler, the hand buff, you know, as she gets the damage, if she's on melee by 3, that's her order ability. She comes with Veil, and then also she comes with 1 armor, and then she's also boosting any random Scoia'tael unit in your hand by 1. So as long as you can keep her alive, you can pretty much have a ton of carryover for the rest of the game, if you have her in round 1.
And what about Vernaseal, right? Vernaseal is basically the one that allows you to deal 2 damage for every Elven Deadeye that you control, and a whole deck surrounds around this being the final play, right? If you're running a Deadeye Ambush leader ability and you start getting into spawning all the tokens that are the Elven Deadeyes, this could deal for even 20 damage in a lot of cases, so that's a big one too to have. It's expensive. It's 12 provision, but it's sort of the big play, so to speak, with that deck.
So talking about Deadeye, what are some of the leader abilities that should be used with Deadeye?
There's really only one.
Yeah, right.
Deadeye Ambush. Yeah.
Yeah.
Deadeye Ambush would be the only one I would use if you're playing a Deadeye deck. If you want hit, that's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that is the always going to be the first option for sure. But I actually have seen people using the move one with Deadeye even as well, because it allows you to, you know, totally either row lock your opponent's cards and also boost up your own if they're, you know, really weak. Because a lot of the Deadeye cards revolve around low-powered bronzes, so if you can get the hand buffs going, buff up the Smuggler, buff up your Dunka or whatever if you're running her, And then you can have a lot of carryover for later, and they can play for bigger points.
Yeah, and usually the Deadeye deck with the scenario, the last card is probably going to be Great Oak. And say your opponent's been killing some of your units, you can use the movement to maybe move some units from the range row to the melee row and boost that Great Oak for that final card.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's the only two I've ever seen with Deadeye. And then maybe just occasionally you might see them use Precision Strike if they want to, you know, set it up to where you can kill with Yavin. Yavin's another great card. He's basically a Great Oak, but just an elf version of him. He damages an enemy unit by the number of elf units in this row. So the more elf units you have in a row, the more damage he does, up to a maximum of 9. So he could play for 13 points for 7 provision.
So I think one of the things I think people are going to have the toughest thing with Gwent, I still continue to have a tough time with it. If I'm playing Scoia'tael, how do I play around Scoia'tael? So you got to have to figure out what decks are playing, right? What's Scoia'tael's weaknesses? We've already talked about what you should be looking for, what cards should be removed, things like that. But how would you guys play around a Scoia'tael deck? Let's say first one that was playing the Symbiosis Gourd meta.
To beat it, I would probably carry a lot of Tal removal. So I find, you know, as someone who likes to run a Devotion Nature's Gift list, I definitely suffer when they have Karathi Heatwave in stock, or they have like a Becker's Rock Slide, something that can remove the Hamadryad Engine, something that can remove Dunka, or even if I don't secure Last Say, something that's going to remove Gourd despite how Tal he gets, right? Those type of cards are definitely the killer for, you know, the heavy boost decks that Scoia'tael is using right now.
I would definitely, to caveat off that, if you know you're going to be playing against a Scoia'tael deck with Gourd, you more than likely need to win the first round and get Last Say. Because then if you're playing with a Northern Realms deck, you can use Bloody Baron to reset Gourd. If you're playing with Nilfgaard, you can poison Gourd. Like, you need Last Say if you know you're playing against a Gourd deck. Otherwise, it's going to be impossible to win.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you make a great point, right? So I think, I'm not going to say you have to do it every time, but winning round one is so, so important. And why is it so important? You know, it's going to be able for you to get the Last Say in round three. You know, you can always just do a dry pass in round two to give them the round, and then it'll be a 1-1 going into the third. I mean, you could always bleed, and that's just going to be different for every game. But yeah, it's a good point, you know. Back in the day when it was, you know, double waters and, you know, Great Oak was your final play, right? So Great Oak is still played a decent amount, I think. I don't see it played as much. So someone want to explain Great Oak? I mean, why is that such a good final card, would you say?
It's one of my favorites, man. It's the throwback Harmony days. And that's how I really got good to begin with. That was one of the first decks that actually gave me success. And when I really started to climb towards the pro rank. So Great Oak's great because it has a high base power. It starts at 7. Now you have a choice whether you want to play it on the left or the right of the row, or even in the middle if you want. You can use your own discretion. So if I play it to the far right, it's going to damage an enemy unit by the amount of units between, of course, the Great Oak and the left side of my board. If we put it on the left side, it's going to boost itself by the amount to the right. So you can use it in a circumstantial manner. So if I need to kill something, then it's a really easy removal. But if I just need to boost and there's nothing to target or it has a shield or whatnot, you can actually just go for that. So it's really versatile. It plays for big points. It's great in short round, even as just a point slam if you're desperate.
Yeah, good point slam for removal, of course, and then a great card if you just want a nice big buff if you play it all the way to the left. And, you know, if you're playing Scoia'tael, you're probably playing pretty Tal, but you're also probably playing a lot of cards on the board. So that kind of gives you the option to really decide what you want to do with the card. Popped up in my head talking about Harmony, I don't see Percival much anymore. Do people still play Percival?
I haven't seen him that often. I'm surprised I still see. You don't see Barnabas anymore. He used to be, you know, the final play for Harmony as well, because he used to boost, you know, an elf, a dryad, and a what was the other one? Gnome by 2.
Mm-hmm.
I just find with Call of Harmony replacing more or less Mystic Echo, we could say that because that's the Harmony sort of type leader. You know, although it adds a new you know, type of unit so that it procs Harmony, the overall Harmony effect's not as great, because it really was kind of a big thing when you're able to get the Water of Brocola and then use later to bring out four of the Dryad, right? Now yeah. it's just half as good, so to speak, and it doesn't synergize nearly as well. I did try making a deck last week because I noticed no one had guides online, and a couple test runs in, I wasn't winning games.
Yeah.
Well, I think Nature's Gift is, I don't want to compare it to a Harmony deck, but Nature's Gift has the massive points and the removal with all the nature cards you can play. So I just can't see people playing Harmony when they could basically have the same amount of points in the Nature's Gift deck, but they also have removal cards like Nature's Rebuke and things like that. Like, you get three Nature's Rebukes in with Forest Protector in a Symbiosis or like a Gourd deck. So it's like, why would I go back to Harmony when it can have removal as well?
Do you think they meant to kill Harmony with the release of Symbiosis, or do you think it's something that just happened?
I mean, I don't think they purposely meant to do it with the release of Symbiosis, but I do remember when they, right when Master Mirror came out, and they really nerfed Harmony, and it just made me not want to play it anymore, and I just haven't come back to it, and I'm sure other people feel the same way.
Yeah, I find the main difference for me is that Nature's Gift is a lot more control-based, as you mentioned, right? Whereas Harmony was kind of mostly just a boost deck. So it just, with the way things are going right now, everyone running heavy control, it's really hard to compete with just a boost deck. Unless you do like a massive swarm, and the rollout of the cards in Harmony is not fast enough anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think they're up there. I mean, Scoia'tael has been being played a lot in that deck. It's a hard deck to deal with. It's got a lot of answers, like you were saying. It's a Harmony deck with tons of removal, technically. And then they got some really good Final Say cards. They could definitely be super difficult to deal with. So just pretty much trying to take care of engines as quickly as possible. Because like we talked about a lot in the other decks that we talk about. And, you know, it's not exactly what the card does now. It's what the card can build to if you don't answer it. What other leader abilities in Scoia'tael do you think are worth visiting? We've already talked about Deadeye. What else do we have? Of course, the Symbiosis one.
Right now, Markham Forge is actually really good.
Yeah, I saw that. Yep.
People are getting back into playing it. Yeah.
Yeah, the dwarves are coming back very strong now with the whole, I think it was a... with the change, the Zoltan and Zoltan's company, and then also, who was it also they just got recently, like, I guess, buffed? What is his name? Was it Yarpin? I believe Yarpin got buffed.
Yarpin's always power? Yarpin always looks like Yarpin. Maybe he got a buff for one base power. It's possible.
I think that's what it was. Yeah, he got a buff in base power.
But, you know, dwarves have always been a good combination of boost and damage. And it's extremely hard to play around a deck where if you're trying to inflict a lot of damage, most of these units have a bunch of armor. So it almost feels like at times that you're wasting your kill cards because you're barely penetrating the armor. You're inflicting one or two real damage to something, and they have ways to put armor back on their units. So it becomes frustrating. I find when I play these decks, the best way to beat them is just to outpoint them, just to get taller and wider than them. Because if we start to go after things like their Berserkers, or we start to go after the resilience cards, a good example would be Zoltan. It has resilience, it has four power, and it has four armor. If I'm wasting like even like a Becker's Rockslide to take that out, it's a little bit of a waste of a card sometimes. You know what I'm trying to say? Because it sits there, it's only worth four later on. It's a pest, but it's hard to, you know, really commit a dedicated removal to something like that.
And I believe Scoia'tael also has the only, I think they're the only faction that has two resilience cards that you can rock in the same deck.
Yeah, that's just what I was about to mention there. You could even, I have seen Ciri Nova ran with dwarves as well. And obviously you can't use Zoltan resilience card with Ciri Nova because he's a little bit too much provisions, but you can definitely get a Gabor Ciri deck and have a bunch of bronze dwarves. I've seen that once or twice. It's very interesting.
Imagine having Gabor, Ciri Nova, and then they also have the Beast of Blaviken and happen to get random resilience, and then you got like a 15-16 point carryover.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. So, I mean, when it comes to like a dwarf deck, some of the key cards I would craft would be Novigradian Justice. I'd probably have Yarpen. I'd probably get Figgis for the defender. I really like Xavier Morin because that's one of the only real engines that's really easy to get started. And, you know, a lot of people even run, which is a bronze card, the Markham Guards. It boosts self by the amount of dwarfs on a row. And that can easily climb up to 8 or 9 points because you're going to be spawning a bunch of tokens throughout, you know, playing a bunch of things here.
Yeah, and Mahakam Volunteers would be pretty good too, right? So that brings them in. Miner's a fantastic 4-point bronze card, I think, too. If you play a lot of dwarfs, Tempering is definitely a really good decision too.
Which one got a buff with the patch? It was the Dwarven Skirmisher.
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, it boosts self by 2 now after it damages an enemy unit. If they survive, it damages them by 3, right? That's actually a really good card.
Another thing I've been seeing, and this is what you would see mostly in devotion-based decks, is people running the Oak Critters. 2 copies of those, and it plays, you know, 7 for 4 points. It's pretty crazy.
And it's also just more treant targets for if you throw a Nature's Rebuke down.
Yeah, and then also you could boost them up with the Dryad's Caress. That's another card that we can touch on. You know, that purifies any of the allied units and also boosted by 3. And if you also control the Dryad, it gives them vitality for 3 turns as well. So, like, those little Oak Critters can easily be, you know, 8 to 10 points.
Yeah, for sure. Would you guys, I mean, what kind of cards have to be in your Skogatzel builds? I mean, I think One Aromancy, right, is kind of comes up as the card it needs to kind of be almost in every deck, unless you're playing Devotion. You guys playing that, Karathi Heatwave, things like that, you think those are still super viable in the Skogatzel decks?
I mean, coming from someone who's been playing Devotion, I don't think it's absolutely necessary because I think you can get away with playing your Fav to Tutor into an Asyngram's Council and a Call of the Forest, right? Because those are cards that are pulling cards, but they're also boosting the cards that you pull, which is huge. Now you could pull into your engines and give them that extra, you know, boost that's going to keep them running for the next turn, for example, right?
Yeah. And when you're referring to tutoring, I mean, what do you mean by that for the people who might not know keywords?
So to break it down, basically a card that when played helps you pull another card that you are 100% certain you're able to get from your deck. So when I play the Fov, for example, I know that it allows me to play the card I'm looking for, being the nature card, Asyngram's Council. And I know that with that card, I'm able to pull the unit that I'm actually looking for. So it's sort of a chain of cards played. It's very simple once you've tried it a few times, but that's ultimately just a way to thin out your deck and to be able to pull into what you need. And for later rounds, it gives you the ability to have better pulls into all your gold cards because your deck is now thinner than it was before.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, right? You'll hear a lot of people say, you know, thinning the deck out, right? You'll hear bleeding a lot of the two, right? Trying to get really good cards out of your opponent early. Thinning is trying to reduce the amount of cards in your deck, which increases your chance of pulling the cards that you need for your win conditions and things like that. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good Skogatzel cards. I mean, I think we've been talking about with all the other episodes, what's their weakness? I mean, what deck would you not want to come up against playing Skogatzel? Or let's just say faction, I guess, would be.
Definitely something that's probably going to be more control-based. You know, if you run into a control deck that can either, you know, kill your best cards before they can get going, because, you know, the Hamadryad, that's going to be the most, you know, tallest target really quickly if you let it get out of hand. So if it gets not if it gets locked, but like if it gets removed, that's one big tall target you don't have to worry about. And then also if it's peat waved, you know, like there's a lot of cards that you can just use to keep the Dryads in check.
Sorry to cut you off. The Skellige Patricidal Fury is a huge one. I'm sure you guys can agree. It's essentially the Symbiosis killer right now because you're relying on these Symbiosis tokens. And with constant Bloodthirst and them damaging your units, it's very hard to keep those short units alive. So they've been a challenge for me to get around.
For sure, yeah.
I have noticed, I was playing against Syndicate earlier, and Scoia'tael, like, it has a strength of being able to fill a board with units, but that can also, like, lead to one of its weaknesses, too. Because I had a board full of Treants, and then my opponent played Tin Boy for the full tribute cost, and I took 18 damage right there. And so cards like Tin Boy, Lacerate, which can damage 2 to every unit in a row, like, anything that can really damage a lot of your units, even just by, like, 1 or 2 points, it can suddenly, like, I thought I was going to win the game. And then that was his final card, and I lost by, like, 5. So cards that can really damage, like, every single unit that you have by 1 or 2 or something like that, that can really be a weakness for Scoia'tael, just because we don't have as much armor if you're playing Dryads or Elves versus if you were playing a Dwarf deck.
Yeah, for sure.
Another card I've been seeing a lot lately, and it's kind of funny that, you know, that they're so weak, but the Broccolon Sentinels, they're at the bottom of the deck, or at the faction, you know, if you want to craft them, or, you know, you most likely will get them in kegs. But these little guys can add up, especially with Allgod now being, you know, in the, what's the word I'm looking for, the unitless decks, in a sense, because your opponent is going to have a bunch of removal cards, non-interactive cards, and then they'll just force you to play your cards if they're deploy effects. And then they'll just bring out their little sentinels to add up for 12 to 14 points if they boosted them up in hand or hand buffs, whatever. And then there's another card that I was looking at just now. Sesynthesis. This dragon has gotten a lot of play recently, again, because of the fact that it has immunity on it, and it's a 8 base power, and it's only worth 9 provision.
Yeah,
I've seen somebody only, you know, win a game just with just only playing the dragon, and their opponent's cards just die out.
Yeah, then you have a couple other ones that we were talking about. Sheldon Skaggs is a great one. Shiru, I see played a lot. I didn't know that Allgod was being played in these decks, which is actually pretty crazy. It's nice to see Allgod being played a lot. I mean, I know when Northern Realms is out. With their new meta, we were seeing Allgod a little bit, but I don't think it really fit in, to be honest.
Yeah, Allgod buffs the Sentinels, and then you just play the leader to, you know, hit down any card, and then you can set up the easy death blow to bring all of them out, and then they'll play for 12 points.
So I know we're focusing on Scoia'tael, but I think unless you guys have some different takes on it with Scoia'tael. I'm getting a question from one of the viewers. It has to do with the Fire Sworn deck, right? What is the most common Fire Sworn deck you guys have seen, and how do you deal with it? So it sounds like this person's having an issue playing against the Fire Sworn deck.
I would definitely recommend they check out our former podcast as well after this, when we did the introduction to Syndicate. There's a lot of information there that we might not cover with our answer to this question here. But certainly the Fallen Knights have been a tricky one to get around.
Yeah.
As they boost every time you're spawning a unit, and they kind of get out of hand quick. And then cards like Ulrich can spawn additional ones. So to get around that, it's tough because you need a combination of tall and wide removal, right? Something that's going to hit the row, and also things that are going to, you know, take out those tall engines if you're unable to get there quick enough.
Honestly, and I think it's only needs to be said just with one card, Geralt Jordan.
Yeah, pretty much.
That'll get through the defenders. You don't have to worry about taking out those little insects, you know, because, you know, they're only worth 2 points, but still, it's still 2 defenders to get through.
Yeah,
I think some Geralt Jordan just gets through all of that.
100%. I think that if you had a combination of high boost for yourself, followed by a hard reset, like whether it be Yurdin or something to that, you know, effect, it would probably be a good balance, right?
Yeah, I would also suggest that if you are playing against Syndicate, they will more than likely try to push round 2, because Syndicate doesn't, it at least from what I've seen, it can't handle a very long round 3. So if you can try and get around that and maybe, like, just win the first round and then, like, try and bleed a little bit, that might be able to help, because they can't, maybe they won't be able to get both Fallen Knights out, or they'll play Ulrich too early or something like that. So if you can have round control and playing Syndicate, that'll really help you out, I think.
100%. And I think it also comes down to taking out their spenders. So when they play stuff like the Inquisitor that's able to spawn tokens, or anything that's able to spawn tokens with the tribute, I would certainly try to remove that first, because then it doesn't proc the Fallen Knight or any of the, you know, big plays. Like, if they play Disarray at the end of the game and their board's not full, it's not really going to amount for much, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, they always say in war, go after the opponent's economy first, right? Because that's what drives the war machine. And with Syndicate being the only thing that really runs off economy, those cards, they're very small cards and don't really do much, but then when they start spending coins, they become very, very difficult to deal with. So if they don't have the coins to spend, they ain't going to be able to do much. So that's a good point with it. But what else you guys got? Anything on topic, off topic? I mean, we're almost at the, sure, at the 30-minute mark. So what are we focusing on next episode? What have you guys, anything fun that happened this last week? Or
I made a Hyper Thin deck. And I'm having a blast with it. It took a while to get it down, and it's with Skellige too. That's what's crazy. I'm loving it. I didn't know the Hyper Thin was a thing with Skellige.
Yeah, it was pretty cool when I saw it. You know, I did a couple deck guides in the past week. I've just been trying to get creative with that sort of thing in my free time, and one of the ones I did recently was on Scoia'tael. So I'm actually looking to do one on Syndicate this week. So that's kind of stuff that I'm planning.
We'll always put the information for the streamers in the comment section. So keep an eye out on that if you want to see his decks. And I know he's got a YouTube channel as well, right?
It's so, coming along, yeah. It's
coming along. So make sure you guys head on over there. What else?
I've just been banging my head against rank one, trying to get pro.
Come on, man.
You can do it.
Yeah, I know. I've got works freed up a little bit for me, so I should be able to have a little bit more time over this season right now. So hopefully either this weekend or the next, I'll be able to hit pro. But I had a 4-day weekend this past weekend, and I literally just plateaued at rank one. So we'll see if we can get, that's what I've been doing for the last 4 days.
I was in top 64 for like 1 day, and I felt like I was the champ. And then all of a sudden now,
speaking of
I think I'm top 600 now.
I just looked right now. And I mean, not that it's not important, but so for global rank, I'm at 108.
That's I mean, that's cool.
That's non-pro rank though, but it's still impressive to me at least. I'll take 108 any day.
I've been constantly battling the whole content creation thing and trying to find time for everything. So I'm like so far out of pro that I got to make sure that I have to by the end of this season. I just need to sit down with a case of beer in like 20 hours to just get to pro so I don't fall even further out.
That sounds pretty fun.
I can tell you right now, I've been probably playing Gwent way too much lately. I joked with Chris, like, you know what? I'm like, I'm done with this game. I uninstalled it. It's gone. It's never coming back. And then I find myself throwing in 18 hours to stream.
Yeah, like one, two dogs.
Nine-hour streams back to back. It's brutal.
A baseball's going on right now, too, so I'm an emotional wreck. I'm constantly just like
it's a constant battle between whether or not we try to be the best at this game or we try to make content about this game. I'm trying to find balance for myself, so yeah.
Well, I was watching was it Freddy Babes? I forgot exactly who it was. It was nice to see someone so good at the game and a content creator not being pro. It's like, oh god, thank you so much. Like, there's so
no pressure.
Because like, sometimes I'm sitting here and I'm like, who's this asshole up here?
I can be like, just like him.
I mean, we all know Trinet will never go into pro just because that's his content right there. He likes to play the rank one gatekeeper.
I don't want to like steal from Trinet, but like I like the idea because like it's just so much less tilting.
And you just don't want the hustle every single month having to climb back in.
I think it's what it is. And then it's like, well, if I don't want to climb back in, I can place in top 500. But then I look at the amount of games you have to play and I'm like, oh my gosh. It's like,
yeah, it definitely requires a lot of time on your part.
It does.
It's not even the amount of games. It's also you have to be good.
Like, of course, you know, that's you. Yeah,
I've certainly put in my games, but a lot of my content's directed around trying new things, and then we butcher the MMR. Yeah. It's like, why am I?
Yo, he's the martyr of MMR for us. Yeah, he always says it too.
If you're going to try anything new, you really got to be able to think on your feet. Because, like, yeah. If you're not playing a meta deck, it's like, I don't know how this is going to work out, but let's hope something good happens. So
I try to make it, like, 30 minutes before the stream and say, okay, we got time for, like, one game. If I win, we roll with this damn thing. And then I hop on stream, lost. And then everybody in the chat's like, what are you doing? Play this.
I always experiment when I reach a new rank, because then I can't go down a rank. So it's like, oh, we made it to rank one. Well, now I can play this deck that maybe is not going to work, because I can at least test it out. But that's what I found is a pretty good idea.
That was like with the Siri Kelly deck, like all of half of last season. I was just playing it. It was never like working, but when it worked, I would just lose my shit because I was so happy. But like, I know that drives people crazy.
So because we had somebody who's been here since the beginning, let's toss a shout out to Two Dogs. So I saw something today that impressed me with him. The guy has 600 wins with NR. Exactly. And he only has 3 other wins with Skellige. Every other faction has 0. that was nuts. I was like, bro, that is some dedication right there.
Bro, I only have like 75, 80 wins with 80 wins with Nilfgaard.
I actually have more wins with monsters than I have Nilfgaard. I couldn't believe that.
Surprisingly, I'm the same way. I was looking at my wins today too. I was curious. So I'm at 173 with Scoia'tael, 156 with NR, and then I have 200 exactly with Skellige. So like they're all pretty close.
Yeah, that's pretty close for the amount of Skellige you play. I figured the amount of Nilfgaard I played there for a while, I would just be so far ahead. But I guess. I know originally when I played Monsters, that was my first, I think that was the first deck I got to pro with, was with Monsters, so.
Damn.
I guess whatever.
Yeah, I guess I just play Northern Realms and Nilfgaard. I have about 550 wins between the two of them, and like maybe 100 between the next 4 factions.
Well, I've been playing, funny enough, most of the wins I've been getting are with Northern Realms, just playing the standard Blue Scout Commando deck with... I don't even think I have Bloody Baron in that. I think the only like super big removal card I have is Selkirk, if I'm not mistaken. It wins, but I just get kind of okay. Well, I'm done. You know, like it's like the same thing. I think that's where I get drained out a lot. Is just the same meta. So I think you know building other decks is super important. You know.
Yeah, and like that's I mean like you know me, I'm always gonna stick around to Skellige, but like when I saw this Hyper Thin deck. And how it works, I was like, okay, this is different.
I did see that.
And I was like, this is very enjoyable. It's refreshing. It's not the typical warrior spam. And like I like how it has 3 different win con options, sometimes even 4, because you have the deck thinning, the round 1, and then you have a round 2 Getty push to bleed them. And then you have your Hyper Thin all set up for round 3 with Jetta. And then you also still have your Blaze of Glory with Jetta. And then you can bring her back your Sigdrifter. Like, that's a lot for one deck.
Yeah.
And the whole point is you're supposed to mill your own deck down to nothing, pretty much.
With Scoia'tael, I know we kind of, at the end of the podcast, with Scoia'tael, we'll save that for another time because we're just kind of going over. But next podcast, what are we focusing on? We got to try to get another episode this week too. So we have to talk about that. Intro to Nilfgaard.
Yep.
We have that
poor
left.
NG getting last because you know once again it got shafted.
At the bottom of the freaking barrel, so it's like might as well be last, you know.
Save the most exciting content. We all know the first thing and only thing that's going to be said during that entire episode is Masquerade Ball consistently.
No more double ball. Thank God.
Stop that. No.
No, this is the guy who would run triple ball. What do you mean?
Triple ball, baby.
That's disgusting. You deserve to be punished with that that nerf to the deck.
If you guys saw, you can actually purify scenarios with boiling oil.
Yes, boiling oil does purify Masquerade Ball. It's a bug. I did it today. I played an NR Shield Wall deck today, and I hit a Thirsty Dame with my boiling oil, and it purified Masquerade, and the guy just stood there like he didn't know what just happened, and then he played a Sire and brought it back. I was like, it's like he planned for that.
Bro, you made his day. Like, man, that's got to make tears of joy roll down the face.
But I want to know, does Kukudak, would he boost or purify a scenario? Because he purifies Is it the cards or the units next
to it? It's units.
Units? Okay. I wasn't sure if there's any other cards that would potentially purify a scenario.
I mean, you could try it. Go for it. Try and set up Siege next to them and see what happens. I've never done it. I just got them today, so I've never really played with them before.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just don't know if there's any other way to purify a scenario other than someone maybe throwing a boiling oil at you. Like, the odds of that happening, they have to play Northern Realms, and then they have to...
Even that seems like they just forgot something in the coding.
I'm about to say, yeah, I think that's more what it is.
It's not even a unit, so...
Yeah.
It's one developer at CD Projekt Red who intentionally left it out.
He's like, yeah, I'm going to do that.
It's the one guy that like sits by himself in the dark room that nobody likes who just wants Nilfgaard to come back, so he's trying to find ways to code it's like, it in.
Fuck, man.
Not all heroes wear capes, guys, you know?
Exactly. Not all heroes wear capes. Well, you guys got anything else before we head out?
Well, oh, the usual plug.
Usual plug, yep. Vicento, big streamer. Make sure you check out Jay Conrad as well. Streaming as well. Ezra, of course. I stream hopefully soon because it's been crazy. But again, guys, www.thebarkeepseverdania.com is our website. We also have, of course, the podcast. Please hit the subscribe button. It actually does go pretty far because the more subs that we have, the more... we climb up the ladder with podcasts and also our YouTube channel, same name, The Barkeep's Redania. Hopefully we'll have this up soon. But guys, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, appreciate it.
All right, man. Thanks. See you.